Get road trip ready with a service checkup at your local Chevy dealer. They can save you time and money and get the job done right the first time, worry-free. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for current service specials or to schedule a test drive.
Our good friend James Rodriguez joins us from Business Insider. He covers real estate and does a great job at it. Hey, James, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, so I'm not buying a house, I'm not selling a house, but I'm still on Zillow every day. First of all, I want to see what my house is worth. I like tracking it, even though I know it's just a Zestimate. I look at Redfin, mm-hmm. too, and some of the others. I like looking at my neighbor's houses and see what's for sale and not for sale, all that stuff. I think a lot of people do that. But soon, or maybe even now, some of these houses that may have been there in the past won't be showing up, right?
Yeah, so it's really going to be actually homes that are being listed for sale now. So listings aren't disappearing from the website, but Zillow has instituted a new policy that will be banning some listings that it says have been marketed in a way that go against the spirit of an open, transparent real estate market. And I can get more into that,
yeah.
But starting Monday, June 30th, they've actually started banning some listings from the website.
Well, maybe we need to break this down a little bit. So where does Zillow get its data from? Is it from public databases?
So these are actually databases that are used across the industry. They're known as the Multiple Listing Services, MLS. And basically, real estate agents, they'll put their listings in these databases, and then they're shared across the local real estate market. So with brokerages, with other real estate agents. And they also feed into the big real estate search portals like Zillow, Redfin, Realtor.com. And you know, that data feed is essential for Zillow. And what some agents have been doing, especially agents from the biggest real estate brokerage in the U.S., Compass, is they've been marketing homes outside of the MLS, but still to the public. So they've been putting it on their own website. So they, you know, in some cases, they've been sharing it in these private listing networks, kind of these clubby groups of other top real estate agents, or they're sharing it in internal databases within their companies. And basically, Zillow hates all of that. And so this policy, of which they're banning some of these listings, is a response to that.
Okay, I want to make sure I understand. So Zillow pulls from an MLS listing, which realtors put the houses that are for sale mm-hmm. up there. And that's normally been seen as a good thing because, hey, it spreads the word far and wide. This house is for sale. More eyeballs, mm-hmm. more people coming in the door, more offers, et cetera, is the theory behind it. But some right. agents at Compass have been kind of moving off the MLS network, almost creating like this private access that they'll look at these homes that you can't find anywhere else, only with us or us in this little club. First of all, are they allowed to do that? How long are you able to do that? Is MLS like regulated by anything?
Yeah, so the MLSs, they're pretty much all of them are regulated by the National Association of Realtors. It's one of the biggest industry groups in the country, and basically they hand down these rules that the local MLSs, there's actually more than 500 MLSs around the country, but they get to kind of create their own rules a little bit, but they mostly follow what the NAR hands down. And the NAR and Zillow now are basically saying, you know, as soon as you advertise a listing publicly, whether that's, you know, even through a for sale sign in the front yard, a Facebook post, an email blast, but also, you know, putting it on, you know, say the Compass website or any other brokerage's website, you need to put it into the MLS within one business day. And that's how it's going to be shared with everyone else. And what these agents are saying is, no, actually, we think that, you know, sellers actually benefit from what they refer to as like pre-marketing. So a lot of these listings actually do end up in the MLS eventually, but that can be after days or weeks of either being shared in these private databases or shared on the brokerage's website, but not shared in the MLSs. And so it's kind of like, it's just a real mess. And actually, there's a huge battle right now in real estate over where people should be advertising their listings, and agents at Compass and some other places are saying, look, there should be more flexibility to this. And then you have a lot of other people around the industry that are saying our market is best when listings are just shared openly with everyone. It's the best way to ensure a transparent marketplace where everybody wins in that, buyers, sellers.
I don't know I don't know why I always thought MLS listings like were monitored by the government in some way, and that you had to do it legally. But I guess I'm wrong. It's all through the National Association of Realtors. So Compass is just like what, giving the middle finger to them? Like, nope, we're not going to follow that rule. Is there any possible ramification, or are they allowed to just say, hey, nope, we're going to create this exclusive club? Exclusivity has a certain appeal to it, to certain buyers, and we can get better prices for our sellers doing it this way. And sorry, we're not going to put it on Zillow. We're not going to let it go everywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the really interesting thing about our system. It's the envy of much of the world, but it's actually a lot more fragile. I mean, it's really just built on cooperation and people basically, you know, millions of agents and their brokerages basically agreeing to share listings in this way. And it's, you know, it's been good for agents because they get their commissions, and you know, they can basically sell their access to the MLS to their clients of saying like, hey, I have access to this system that shows all the listings in the market. And yeah, it's, you know, what Compass is doing now, it'll be interesting to see. They recently sued Zillow in federal court, basically saying Zillow is just instituting this policy to protect their market dominance. And Zillow is saying, look, if you don't want to advertise on Zillow, that's totally fine. But we don't feel an obligation to accept your listing after it's been shown everywhere else, or it's shown in one place but not others.
Right, because that's Zillow's leverage that they have here, is that if you're going to be exclusive with your listing for a week and then put it on here, no, we're not going to even allow you to put it on here ever. If you're not going to put it on right away, then you don't get to put it on at all. That's what Zillow's saying.
Yes, and you know, another interesting wrinkle in this is that what Zillow is actually still allowing is for, you know, if somebody truly wants a private experience for their home listing, maybe they're an A-list celebrity or they want privacy for some reason, they can still choose an option where it's just advertised within a brokerage. So say it could be advertised within Compass only to other Compass agents. Zillow is okay with that, at least for now. But the policy is basically, as soon as it's clear to the public that a house is for sale in some way, it better be in the MLS and it better be available to Zillow within one business day.
But Texter says realtors pay fees to their MLS. Does Zillow pay, or like once it's posted on the MLS, any one of us could snag it and grab it free?
Yeah, so realtors do pay for membership. Companies like Zillow, that they, you know, it's pretty much anyone that has access to this feed, again, which is not, typically it's not available to the public. Typically you do have to work with a real estate agent to have access to these databases. And so Zillow and other companies, they all pay for access to these databases and to get those fees.
Okay, well, we'll wait and see where this shapes on out. I don't know where I stand on this one, but I tend to lean with keep it as open as possible, and more eyeballs end up to more prices. But there's a reason for the exclusivity. Obviously, agents do it for some reason. Okay, James, we'll if you get an update on the court story, give us a holler, okay?
Sounds great.
All right, that's James Rodriguez from Business Insider. Let's take a break. Ooh, question of the day. A company left for dead by investors, saved by a game of blackjack. And a good thing, this company revolutionized their industry and helped level the playing field for millions of small businesses. What company am I talking about? 312-981-7200. Okay, question of the day. A lot of people must have known this story, and I just found out about it today. But a company that was left dead for dead by investors. It was a game of blackjack from the owner that kept it afloat for a few days. And a good thing, too, this company revolutionized their industry and helped level the playing field for millions of small businesses. David was the first to call in with what guest, David?
Oh, Federal Express.
That is correct. Yeah, it was Fred Smith, launched the company in 1973, was burning cash. Fuel costs were going up. Customers were slow to catch on, and FedEx bank account had dropped to $5,000, not enough to cover Monday's $24,000 fuel bill. So he went to Vegas, and he won blackjack up to $27,000 and ended up getting some of the investors back, and it helped stem the tide. And really, it changed that whole industry. I mean, it really moved things around, moved documents around, and leveled the playing field. They say a lot of small businesses were able to survive and thrive because of their ability to compete on delivery, as some of the big companies were. David, did you just know that story off the top of your head, or you heard that before?
I read it a long, long time ago.
Okay.
When I was playing the horses and
there you go,
checking out different gambling things, and that happened to show up.
You were playing the ponies, and you saw a story about a guy who saved his billion-dollar company at the blackjack table. David, I don't have a t-shirt for you today. Unfortunately, we have to give you a high five. I'm so sorry, but great job with the answer to the question of the day.
That's great.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Thank you.
When I see a David in person, we'll do the high five. That's great. Hey, you know what else is great? Peter Greenberg. You hear him a lot here on WGN Radio. He comes on a couple hours after my show on Saturday, Ion Travel. Peter, thanks for hopping on with us this evening. How are you?
Happy to be with you, and happy almost July 4th.
Almost July 4th. Man, every time I seem to read a story, it's we're back in air travel to where we were pre-pandemic. O'Hare just crossed that threshold with our busiest day ever. It might have been a couple weeks ago. So what? I mean, we've kind of, most of the airports now have kind of crossed that threshold, huh?
Well, they have, but don't get too excited because we're seeing such a huge drop in incoming travelers from overseas based on tariffs and trade wars and travel bans. And we're also seeing a lot of uncertainty in the United States in terms of the economy. So while we're going to see a huge number this weekend for the, you know, for the 5 or 6 day period that covers July 4th, the summer is going to go a little different direction simply because airfares domestically are shooting way up because people don't want to leave. They want to stay within the U.S. Airfares overseas are shooting way down.
Mm. So if you want to make an overseas trip, there's maybe some deals out there to be had.
There will be for like the next 2.5 weeks because here's what's going on. The airlines have seen the numbers drop. I came back, I talked about this on my show, came back on a flight from London to Los Angeles on a 777, and all the coach passengers had their own row.
Whoa.
Right?
Yeah.
So airlines can't sustain that. So what the airlines are doing is they're pivoting to what? Either decreasing the frequency of their flights or downsizing the aircraft operating those flights. So by the time they turn around and do that, then we're back to the law of supply and demand, and ticket prices go up because those planes get full. But for the next 2 to 3 weeks, now's the time to buy those tickets.
I mean, the airlines have to be the ones taking the brunt of this hit in international travel. We've talked to a couple of hotels. Now, Chicago gets about 2 million international travelers a year, which is a lot. But, you know, if that number goes down by 10%, that represents 100,000 people. If it goes down more, et cetera. But the vast majority of people coming to Chicago are from domestic travel. The point I'm just trying to make is a lot of the hotels said, yeah, we might notice it a little bit. But when you spread out the hit on all these hotels, they may all feel it a little bit. But the airlines, there's not a lot of them that go overseas. They're going to really bear the brunt of this loss in international travel.
Yeah, but trust me when I tell you the hotels are noticing a lot more than a little bit. What they're not telling you is that they've made a decision that they'd much rather be half full but not discount their rates than to be full and discount. So you see hotels operating at 50 or 60% occupancy.
Are you telling me the PR person at the hotel didn't give me a straight answer, Peter?
Yes, I am.
I'm not surprised by that. Peter, hang on the line for me, if you don't mind. We got more to chat about here. And if you got any questions, 312-981-7200. We're just warming up on our travel talk. Your Money Matters. Peter Greenberg, care enough to join us here for a couple segments. We appreciate that. And Peter, as people get ready to travel this weekend, we're already seeing thunderstorms rumbling out east, and that's already affecting travel. I mean, these storms that can pop up and the ones that kind of travel through the eastern seaboard, I mean, man, they really hit a few airports and can mess up a lot of things for a lot of people.
Exactly. And weather's always the great intangible, but if you take a look at air traffic flow, you have a problem in the east or the southeast. The rest of the United States basically shuts down within 2 hours because the planes aren't moving and they can't get in. So always don't never look at where your flight is going. What you need to do is ask where the plane assigned to your flight is coming in from. That'll tell you everything you need to know.
Yeah, and a lot of the apps now will do that. You just look at your flight and you go, there's like a little button that says, where is my plane now? And I have found that to be such a handy resource to at least manage my expectations.
I live by Flight Radar 24 and Flight Aware. That's all. I don't look at the apps from the airlines. They're always too late and not fully, they're not really, fully disclosing. But FlightAware.com, oh my goodness, and Flight Radar 24, that's the Bible, those two things.
Oh, Peter, you're a man of my own heart. I have Flight Radar 24 on all the time. Anytime we're sitting out in the backyard and I see a plane, we play a little game. Where's it coming from? Where's it going? Please tell me.
The same thing.
I do the same thing. You must be pretty good at reading the jet routes.
You know what? I am. I mean, and my wife and I play that game all the time. And, you know, we look up, we're the original plane spotters, but we cheat because we go to Flight Radar 24.
Oh, please tell me you're also the guy that if anyone's on a flight, you ask them what flight number they're on and you track it while they're in the air.
I don't do that. I do better than that. I look at the tail number and I tell you everything about that plane.
It really permeates into your everyday social life, Peter. That's I love that. It's certainly something you love. Where's some hot spots right now that you know people are either maybe getting a deal in or maybe newly discovering? I feel like you and I chatted a couple years ago and it was, you know, Jackson Hole or Bozeman. Are there any newer spots that are popping up on people's radar where they really want to go?
Well, believe it or not, the Midwest is coming back. Minnesota's hot. Iowa's hot. Wisconsin's hot. You know, these flyover states that people used to ignore, not this summer. And lots of great things to do. Seriously.
Iowa? No offense.
You heard me. If they build it, they will come.
I do think that also, I mean, that's obviously been a Chicago destination, all of the Wisconsin and the Minnesota. But you're saying from even on the coasts, people checking out the upper Midwest.
Absolutely. Because who wants to stand in line? Who wants to pay over what they should be paying? And you know what? It's manageable, and there are great experiences in these states. I mean, how many lakes are there in Minnesota? Come on, yeah. Right? I mean, it's unbelievable. And Wisconsin, I mean, my favorite city, of course, is Madison, but I'm biased because I went to school there. But the point is, all over Wisconsin, and catch this summer, how many ships are cruising the Great Lakes?
Yeah.
They never cruised there before. We're talking Huron, Superior, Erie, Michigan, of course, and There's a cruise line right now that actually leaves from Navy Pier and goes all the way up to Canada. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. I've been seeing those pop back up again. It's a relic of, what, the 40s and 50s when the Great Lakes steamer cruisers or the big cruise, well, they're not very big, but the cruise ships then were, that was high flying. That was style.
And it still is today. And you're literally docking in ports that without these ships, nobody even knows about them, and they're great towns. I could just spend a time getting off every one of those ships and every one of those ports and just going antiquing.
Yeah. Had a question from the 708. They heard about more travel alerts for U.S. travelers. The 708 admits it does make them a little nervous. Any tips that Peter might have for someone if they are traveling overseas, should we just ignore it and travel as if we're going to travel anyways, or should we not wear anything with American flags on it? They're just kind of curious how you do it, Peter, when you see one of these warnings pop up.
Well, first of all, you have to interpret the warning. How many people read State Department travel advisories? Fully, number one, you should. But then don't just stop there. Do two more things that I tell you to do, and then you get to make an informed, intelligent decision. Number two, go to the British Foreign Office on their website and read their travel advisories for their citizens. I actually think they do a better job. And then number three, with very few exceptions, no matter where you want to go in the world, there's at least a daily or a weekly English language newspaper published there. Read the last 30 days of their issues online. You'll know exactly if you want to go.
That's a good point. The 847 wants to know, I always wondered, what is Peter's favorite trip he's ever taken? Ooh, that must be like choosing between kids, Peter.
It is. I mean, look, there are 196 countries in the world. I've been lucky enough to go to 152 of them, which means I still haven't gone to 44 of them. But I'm telling you right now, I have about 20. I can't give you one. I really can't. But for me, I'll give you my metric, and you may think this is crazy, but I'll explain. My favorite places in the world, where I sleep the best. Because where you sleep the best, where you think the best, where you create the best, where you love the best, where you aspire to return. And that's on my list. If I can sleep well, I can't wait to go back.
Well, then where do you sleep well, Peter?
Camden, New Jersey. No, I'm kidding. I sleep well in, and see if you can figure out the theme here. I sleep well in Tasmania. I sleep well in Lucerne in Switzerland. I sleep well in Southwest Ireland. I sleep well in Madison, Wisconsin. I sleep well off the coast of Long Island in New York at a place called Fire Island. Okay, what do they all have in common?
A little more isolated, perhaps?
No, they're all in the water.
Oh, that water. And Madison, right? That's what threw me off the isthmus. You got the two lakes there. Yeah, you're right on that.
Four lakes.
All right. I'm not up on my Madison lakes, but I do love Madison, sure. 815 has an interesting question for you, Peter. I think this one's great. So they wanted to know, you read all these best of travel lists online, and the 815 says, I feel like they've made travel more bland, that we're just chasing lists now of things to check off What's a good tip to not just try and follow the list of the trendy places, but instead just really have a great travel experience? Boy, that's a deep question.
Actually, I have an answer, because we do a show on television that airs right now on PBS called Hidden. And the concept of that show goes against those lists. The concept of the show is no gift shop, no tour bus, no brochure, no guidebook, no TripAdvisor sticker. I take you to the most extraordinary experiences in a destination that nobody knows about. But here's the key. They're all accessible to you. That's the key. And who do I talk to find that stuff out? I don't talk to general managers. I don't talk to the tourism boards. I talk to the maids. I talk to the bellmen. I talk to the bus drivers. I talk to the people who live there in those neighborhoods. And they can't wait to tell me the cool places they hang out at. And they're all right.
I love that. I love, yeah, talking to the people that actually live there and work there, and not the people that are trying to sell you something. It's why I always try to, anywhere I go, any city, to try and ride the bus, ride the metro, or whatever it is, the underground. I don't know. You just get a sense of how people actually live there, and that makes the trip more complete.
I couldn't agree more. Keep doing that.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Peter, you've got the show this weekend, 5 p.m. It's on Saturdays when it airs here in Chicago. Anything you want to tease about this weekend? Are you doing anything 4th of July special?
Well, it's not a 4th of July special about America. We're actually coming from one of the more historic hotels in London. It celebrates its 160th birthday. It's the Langham Hotel. Such great history there, because what are they next to? The BBC. And you never go. You, of course, you understand who got bombed in World War II. But they rebuilt the hotel, and it's amazing.
Oh, that's really cool stuff. I'll be listening, Peter, on my drive home from my show. I appreciate it. Take care.
Right back at you, man.
That's Peter Greenberg, Eye on Travel. He's great. I love his stories, and he could probably tell a bunch of them.